Chrissy Boy Low, it makes guys like us feel older when the disco queen herself, Donna Summer, because I bet you had the patent leather shoes back in the day, CeeLo. I bet you had the bell bottoms back in the day, CeeLo. I bet you had the leather pants back in the day, CeeLo. I bet you had the disco records. I bet you had the disco videos. Am I lying, CeeLo?
Oh, man. That's my era, Tony. Little Bee Gees action, Donna Summer. I'm so old, and you'll remember this. I'm so old. I actually remember Marvin Gaye singing the national anthem before the NBA All-Star game. I think it was 82.
We were talking about that, you and I were, the other day.
82 and, or 83. And he sang it almost to the beat of Sexual Healing. And that's, that's 30 years ago.
My dad, World War II veteran, goes, he just perverted the national anthem. It makes those old-timers. And they have a good point, you know. They're like, look, just go out there and sing the melody. He went, oh, say, can you see? CeeLo, the local action here, over under, bro. The local action is Tennessee 6.5 this football season. Chris Lowe, you going over? Or you going under on that?
Oh yeah, I'm definitely over on that. It never plays out the way any of us think, and that's we all love to sit down and we do it. I do it with my kids, and you do it. We do it with friends. We go down the schedule and say, okay, win, lose, win. It never plays out that way. You know, there's always, you can't account for a Justin Hunter going down. You can't account for a Tyler Bray breaking his thumb. You can't account for a guy maybe you were counting on, let's say a Cordero Patterson. Maybe he's not quite ready. Maybe the McCullers kid's not quite ready. And there's surprises in a good way, too. So I definitely think this is a better football team than 6.5 wins. I've said it. I'll continue to say it. I think looking at their schedule and looking at the experience that they have now in key spots, the way they've recruited, and now they have some depth in key spots. Hey, it's not perfect. I still wonder about the running game. I still wonder if they got a difference maker at running back on campus. Defensively going to a 3-4 and being lean at linebacker, I still wonder about making plays on the ball in the secondary. So there's question marks. But I still think with the way they've recruited and their experience and their schedule, Tony, I feel like if they win fewer than 8 games this year, it's a huge underachievement for this football team.
So well put. CeeLo, we continue to get more and more aggressive. You got to give it to Alabama. For the longest time, pre-Saban, they did not schedule people. He has made it a point to not only schedule people, but to get involved with high-profile football games. The 2014 college football season, apparently, Chris, is going to open with West Virginia, Alabama. What can you tell me about it down in Atlanta? Do you believe that to be the case?
Yes. Yeah, and I've talked to Saban about his philosophy. He likes playing at a neutral site, you know, and certainly a place like Atlanta where they have recruited and continue to recruit at a very high level. I mean, he's gone in and got a lot of great players out of that area. So there, Dallas, you know, they're playing Michigan and Dallas, well, Arlington this year. You know, you couple the fact that Texas A&M is moving into the conference, then he's going to do that every year. You know, he's going to go play somewhere where he feels like it's going to enhance their recruiting, and then he's going to play, you know, a high-profile marquee team. That's sort of, now they did do that the last 2 years. They played a home and away with Penn State. That had been scheduled, I think, before he got there. But his deal is to play a Virginia Tech, a West Virginia, a Michigan, a Clemson, somebody like that every year at a neutral site, preferably a site where he's going to be able to recruit and there's a lot of good football players. And hey, in the state of Georgia, I mean, Georgia can get theirs and Florida can come in and get them and Georgia Tech can get theirs and there's still a lot of good ones left.
Chris Lowe joined us today on the program. He's, of course, with ESPN.com. I want to encourage you to hold your phone calls. As we're live today at your sushi spot here on a beautiful Thursday, come out and eat some lunch and talk some sports with us. And I'm a little displeased at our showing today. We haven't had many folks up here today. But that's sort of the way it goes. It's a beautiful day outside. Support these folks when you get the opportunity. And if you're in the neighborhood today, come eat some lunch with us. We're here making it happen with you. Love for you to get out here. A little disappointed in the showing so far today, but you're probably a little disappointed in me an hour and 15 minutes in, so we're disappointed with each other. This is a great spot we're in as we visit today with Chris Lowe on the show. Chris, should Tennessee fans, do you feel like, should they feel slighted as to having that Friday night game in Atlanta? Or you feel like, given what we've been through, we should feel pleased to be there at this point?
No, I think it's, you know, I think it's the latter. I mean, it's, Tennessee football is not what, you know, we're used to it being. And I think that's a sore subject with a lot of people. You know, what, three losing seasons in the last 4 years, you know, the old Bill Parcells saying, you are what your record says you are. And Tennessee has not been an upper echelon team the last 4 or 5 years. It goes all the way back to the end of Coach Fulmer's tenure. You know, they just haven't been what they were in the 90s. I mean, they're not, when you start lining up the top tier SEC teams right now, Tennessee's not one of those. So I think the fact that they're playing opening weekend as part of that Chick-fil-A kickoff doubleheader is a pretty nice, you know, I think it's a pretty nice boom for Tennessee. Now, they're not playing on Saturday night. I know Tennessee fans would rather play on Saturday night. They'd rather play on ESPN as opposed to ESPNU. But it's still going to be a game on Friday night where everyone's going to be watching. Anybody that likes college football, for the most part, is going to be watching that. Yes, it's. I don't personally like playing games, period, on Friday night because I think that's the high school's night. So I think that's the night that belongs to high school football. So I think, you know, as a rule, I don't like playing on Friday. But still, it's better. To me, it's a lot better being there playing as part of that weekend with so much of the national focus is going to be, you know, on that weekend than sort of open at home against a Buffalo or an Akron or somebody like that.
Hey, see, Steve Spurrier's gained some traction among the coaches. A couple guys have come out and said that they like the idea of making divisional games way more, mean more, in terms of wins, losses, than non-divisional games. Do you think that has legs, or do you think that's just talk? Do you think there's an opportunity, something down the road like that could happen? Because it seems like that's a fair and equitable way to do things in this league where not everybody's going to have the same weighted schedule. I.e. Georgia last year.
Yeah, I think that proposal has about as much chance of passing as Steve's proposal last year, the coaches to pay players out of their own pocket. I mean, I understand where he's coming from, and you're right, all schedules are not created equal, but why play a conference game if it doesn't count against your conference record? And that makes no sense to me whatsoever. I can tell you that in talking to people in the SEC office, it's not going to pass. I know people say, okay, well, I have divisions. We have divisions because you got the conference game, excuse me, the conference championship game. That's how you set that up. That's the loophole, you know, that Roy Kramer found years ago when they were able to create a conference championship game. So that's why you have the divisions in football. But no way, I don't see any way, Tony, that you will ever play an SEC conference game and then have your conference record at the end of the season not reflect that game. If that's the case, then why is it a conference game?
We visit today with the great CeeLo today on the show. The Arkansas situation, Chris, how ugly is that? What's going to be the fallout there?
We're talking about the kids who were arrested for
the stealing, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, the big name in that whole deal was Mark Lowell Wade. He was the guy that they thought, Tony, could sort of step in and be what Joe Adams was for him last year. You know, a guy that could return punts, a guy that could make plays after the catch, you know, a really fast, explosive guy in the open field. So I don't see any way any of those kids are back unless those charges are reduced or dismissed. You're just not going to, in this day and age, or any age for that matter, you're not going to play with a felony charge, a felony burglary charge, nor should you play hanging over your head. So they lose him. That's a big loss because, you know, their receiving core has sort of been thinned out. You know, you lose Jarius Wright, you lose Joe Adams, you lose Greg Childs. They had some other guys, Quinta Funderburk, the Whitehurst kid now who've left the team that they thought were going to be guys that could step up into bigger roles. So it's a receiving core that has taken a hit. I think Kobe Hamilton is outstanding. In fact, I think Hamilton and Justin Hunter, in my mind, are the two best receivers in the SEC. Now Hunter's got to come back 100%, but by all accounts, he's on schedule. But they're not going to, you know, Tyler Wilson's not going to have, you know, as many good guys to throw to. Certainly, as many established guys. Although I think Chris Gregg, who's their sort of tight end receiver, is a guy that can do for them what DJ Williams did his last year there.
What are you hearing, Chris, about that story?
About the kids that were.
Yeah, is it going to be a serious deal? Is it going to be a thing where they're going to be suspended for a couple games? Is there a potential?
They're definitely suspended now, and I think what's going to happen is like everywhere here, Florida, Georgia, across the league, they're going to try to get these charges reduced to where they're misdemeanors, reduced or dismissed because there's no way. Just like the kid that Ole Miss signed a few years ago that had the felony. It wasn't reduced, and they had to cut him loose. Schools just aren't going to have players playing for him on their roster. They're going through felony charges. You go back to the whole LSU deal last year with Jordan Jefferson. Remember, the initial charges were with felony assault, and then those players were indefinitely suspended. Jefferson misses, the first four games, and then it's reduced to misdemeanor. All of a sudden, he gets back on the team. I would say it's going to take that same type of scenario at Arkansas for those kids to play again, Tony.
Harvey, describe your hibachi chicken that you're eating while Chris Lowe's talking right now.
This hibachi chicken is
It's so good.
So fresh.
Ah!
And the flavor is so...
It's real, man. It's real.
It's 100%
real.
Incredible. I mean, even the steamed rice is good. How do you make good steamed rice?
Exactly! As we visit today, that's well put, as only you can. How do you make steamed rice?
Make steamed rice really, really good? Well, you come to the hibachi, whatever. You come to the sushi spot, that's what you do.
CeeLo, on your way out. On your way out, see. Give me a thought about Coach Fulmer, first ballot Hall of Fame. You covered him during the glory years.
Well, first of all, I think it's very well deserving. And, you know, people, maybe some of the younger people, the people that weren't around, will probably choose to remember the last part of his career more so than the entire body of work. And, you know, the last three or four years weren't the greatest. Although the year before he was fired, he was in the SEC championship game, leading the eventual national champion in the fourth quarter. And I don't know that, you know, Tennessee's close to playing an SEC championship game anytime soon. I think his greatest legacy is how much it meant to him to coach at Tennessee. You know, and just that, you know, people say, well, nobody else really came after him, or he never was a hot commodity anywhere else. Well, here's the deal. He never wanted to go anywhere else. This was his destination job. You know, he was a Tennessean to the core. He was a guy that grew up in the state, went to school here, he played here, was assistant coach, and it was, you know, it meant everything to him to bring Tennessee its first national championship in 47 years. I mean, a lot of people, you know, a lot of coaches are in this thing. Al Wilson said it best. I caught it with Al earlier this week. He said Coach Fulmer invested his, you know, everything he could into that job. He was Tennessee. Tennessee football was him. You know, some coaches or a lot of coaches move around now. They use accomplishments as stepping stones to go somewhere else. You know, he never looked at it that way. And he obviously never won another championship after that. But in his mind, he had done something special. And I guarantee you, if you talk to him, and I did have a chance to talk to him earlier this week, you know, that's something that he will carry with him proudly the rest of his life, that he was able to bring his alma mater, that championship that had escaped him for nearly 50 years.
You know, And one other thought on him. You talk about how much the job meant to him in this age of the businessman coach and these guys that jump around. And I mean, John L. Smith just punked his alma mater like they meant nothing to him. You know, you think about a guy like that. We were talking a couple days ago, and I don't want to start anything here, but it's just interesting to talk about. And this is a type of season that we're in now in the spring where hypotheticals come up. Tennessee would have left him over there and let him coach and not removed him when they did. And I was in favor of making the move, by the way, but let's say they didn't. Is the football program in better shape right now than it is than it currently is in your mind?
Well, I don't think there's any question it would be. But I understand, and Phillip said himself that he was responsible for letting the program get to a position where somebody felt like they had to make a move. And that's what happened. I mean, when you have two losing seasons in 4 years at a place like Tennessee, Georgia, LSU, you know, chances are there is going to be a move made, even with a guy like that who'd been there for so long and been so consistent. You know, it was dipping. You know, so I think even the most devout Phillip Fulmer fan at that point has to say, well, you know what? Maybe it is time to make a change. That said, I think a lot of people that looked at that situation and knew sort of where Tennessee was headed said, well, what, you know, maybe it's best to give him one more year and see what's out there. Give him some guidelines, what has to happen. Then you have a chance that last year to do your homework and to formulate a plan. You know, in Tennessee's defense, and I'm talking about Mike Hamilton and all the people who made that decision, because it wasn't just Mike Hamilton. I think that's the first thing that needs to be stated. You know, Mike Hamilton didn't solo make the decision to oust Phillip Fulmer. He had the support of all the power brokers over there, okay? And a lot of those same people, and they know who they are, were in that room patting Phillip and Vicky on the shoulder and hugging him and telling him how wrong it was. They're the same people who told Mike Hamilton, you go ahead and make the move. That said, nobody had a crystal ball, Tony. You didn't know that Lane Kiffin was going to come in here for a year and then bolt and leave you high and dry 2 weeks before signing day, you know, and then all the transition and all the attrition that occurred between all those coaches, you know, no school could overcome that and be at the
Thank
level.
You, brother.
All
you
that
have
said,
good.
I don't think Tennessee would have gotten back to where he had him in the 90s, but I do think over these last few years he would have gotten up to the SEC championship game, especially as weak as the East has been at least once these last 3 years.
You're on the record right now. Let me make sure I got this now.
What's that?
You're on the record right now saying as weak as the East has been the last 3 years, you believe Tennessee gets there.
At least one
gets
time.
I think
as strong as the West was, they would not have won. I don't see them beating, you know, LSU or Alabama, any of those teams, Auburn in 2010, certainly. But I think it's been wide open the last couple of years. And I think when you look at his track record, Tony, he never went more than 2 years and did not go to Atlanta after they won it in 97 and 98. He was still the last team to win back-to-back SEC championships. But after that, when he finally broke through, he never went longer than 2 years and did not get to Atlanta. Okay, even the year before they push him out, in 07, he's there. So, yes, I think given his track record, and I think knowing that definitely he had another year or he's out, I think he gets them back at some point. I don't think they get back to an 11-win type team, because I think with Saban in the league and Spurrier at South Carolina, Chris Meyer and the way he had it going at Florida, it was just such a tough league. But I do think with how weak the East has been that they would have been good enough at least one time to break through and win the East and get to Atlanta.
Chrissy Boy, thank you, my friend. Great talking with you. Appreciate the great job you do over at ESPN.com. Hope you have a Doc Godone.
Okay, Tony. Take care, buddy.
Great Chris Lowe joining us today on the show.